You're listening to episode 338 of the Building Psychological Strength podcast. I'm your host, Dr. April Seifert. On this podcast, we uncover the information, tools, and techniques to turn our mind into our most valuable asset. Hey everyone, thank you so much for being with me this week. Welcome to this episode of Building Psych Strength. I'm Dr. April, and I'm so glad that you're here. You know, in Peak Mind, the Center for Psychological Strength, we rely on a couple of schools of thought to do our work. One of them, obviously, is psychology, but the other one is the field of life design. Now, the particular, say, flavor of life design that we tend to subscribe to is one that was put out by the Stanford University Life Design Lab. So a couple of guys, Bill Burnett and Dave Evans, a few years ago, wrote this incredible book called Designing Your Life. They have since followed it up with another book called Designing Your Work Life. They created the Stanford Life Design Lab, which it basically puts out one of the most, or if not the most, popular courses at Stanford called Designing Your Stanford. And basically, they use the human-centered design process. This is the process that creates the most beloved consumer products, things like the Instant Pot, the iPad, the iPhone. These consumer products, they're so loved because they were used or they were created using this process called human-centered design. And human-centered design is a process whereby the very first step, number one always, it's called empathy. It's to get to know your user. What do they struggle with? What are their goals? What motivates them? What makes them tick? All of those pieces. Now, in consumer products, say the Instant Pot, right? They had to think about who the core user of the Instant Pot would be. P.S., it's basically me. It's like a busy woman running a household with probably some kids or a lot of responsibility. Now, they thought about what would her goals be? Okay, well, her goals are probably to create delicious, healthy food for her family without creating a whole bunch of dishes or creating a whole big process around it. And they went through this process of getting to know her and all the barriers to her reaching that goal, and they developed the Instant Pot to help her meet that goal and get over those barriers. Now, that's just a quick example, but the life design process that the Stanford Life Design Lab uses is very similar. They have a very similar step, first step, this empathy step in their process, and they call it the Odyssey. So it's basically where you spend some time crafting a clear picture of what you want your life to look like. It's called your Odyssey. So if you've ever done their books, you've probably written this out for yourself. Now, I revisit this idea of my Odyssey often. And there's a process that I use for getting to a clear picture of that Odyssey. And I had an interesting breakthrough a couple of weeks ago. And that is what spurred today's episode. Basically, today's episode is coming at you from the perspective of sometimes it's hard to know what you want. Or sometimes we feel like we have a good picture of what we want, but that's not deep down ultimately what it is we want. So today, I want to talk a little bit about that notion of crafting the Odyssey and why it's important. And I have a little gift for you to go along with this episode. I wanted to give you a glimpse into the journey that I take, the process that I take when I go in and I connect to my Odyssey myself. I wanted to give you the same tools that I have. So there is a freebie that accompanies this episode, and I am so excited for you guys to get your hands on it. This freebie is basically a guided visualization that I use all the time on myself, as well as a downloadable workbook. You'll learn more about it as we get into the episode, but I want you to, in your mind or in your browser, bookmark www.peakmindpsychology.com/desire. We're uncovering what you truly desire in your life, and that's our goal today. All right. So you can see why I'm so excited that you joined me for today's episode, because life design is something, as a field and as a practice, it's something that I am incredibly passionate about. So we're going to start and talk a little bit about life design specifically, but this odyssey step, this empathy step, this initial primary step that we take in the process can be one where people get stuck. It seems like such a simple question, right? Like, what do I want? But sometimes the most simple questions are not the easiest ones to answer. So we're going to dive in a little bit there. And then I'll tell you a little bit more about the resource that I have available for you. I really highly suggest you go and grab it and then bookmark the page that you get when you sign up for this resource. Bookmark that page so that you can come back and you can do this exercise over and over again. All right, so let's start out with just a little overview of life design itself. It's interesting because you've probably heard me tell this story if you've heard me on other podcasts or been to a speaking engagement that I've spoken at or whatever, maybe even on the podcast, this podcast. But I want to start with why life design is something that is so critical and important to me. You know, most of you probably know I have my doctorate in psychology. And way back when I was in graduate school, that's when I truly started to realize how important it was to live life by your own design rather than living it by default or sort of passively allowing things to happen to us. So when I was very young, when I was 11 years old, my dad passed away from cancer. And he had been fighting cancer for 5 years. So our family had been turned upside down for a very long time at this point. And I was 11, right? So this was half of my life had been spent in hospitals and, you know, dealing with the uncertainty of what might happen to this very important figure in my life. And after my dad passed away, all of the things that you would expect to happen did. We grieved. It was brutal. We spent so much time trying to figure out what our family looks like and how to move through life without this important figure in our lives. We faced financial challenges. It was not easy. I had a single mom who did not go to college herself, who had pretty low-paying jobs. At one point in time, we were actually at risk of losing our house. I mean, it was a really difficult time. But that's the thing that everybody kind of expects, right? Like, you kind of expect that, man, if you lose somebody that important in your family at that, you know, stage of the game, of course it's going to cause some ripple effects. But what you don't expect are the continued lessons that you learn as a result of that. So I mentioned being in graduate school when sort of the scene of this story actually exists. I was in graduate school and I was sitting at my desk and I was writing a really large research paper for one of my classes. And I had, you know, research stacks of books and printed out articles all around me. And for some reason, I was procrastinating. That's probably what the reason is. Let's be realistic. But for some reason, I was sitting there and I started thinking about all the things that I wish I was doing in my life that I wasn't actually doing. So I desperately wanted to try distance running, something you guys might also know about me. I've been living with multiple sclerosis for over 25 years. I've experienced 2 bouts of blindness, a bunch of paralysis, all of that. And there was something about distance running that was like, I wonder if I could. Like, people like me with MS are not supposed to be able to do that, but there's really no physical reason why I couldn't right now. And so there was this bug in the back of my mind that I always wanted to try it. And then to add insult to injury, one of my other colleagues in graduate school who was getting her PhD as well, she ran a marathon that year. And that just lit the spark for me. But I was afraid. And I hadn't even started Googling how you start to train for a marathon. Because here's the thing, if I was being honest, I was afraid that I might run slowly, or that I might not be able to finish, or that I might prove to myself that this was truly something that I wasn't able to do. How sad is that, right? And there was a laundry list of other things that had the exact same bottom line. I wanted to try these things, I wanted to go after them, but I was afraid for a variety of reasons. So again, put yourself back in my shoes, sitting at your desk, killing it on the outside, right? Like, I'm getting a PhD, I'm publishing my own research, I'm running multiple research labs. I look like I am killing it. And on the inside, all I can think about is the stuff that I wish I was doing. And on the inside, all I could think about was how I didn't want to be a research one professor. I wanted to go into more of an applied route with my research. So all of this together put me in a position where I was like, I feel like I'm living somebody else's life. And for some reason, I was sitting at my desk and I remembered my dad. And this question popped into my head that changed my life forever. And that question was, what would my dad give to have the opportunities that I'm wasting right now? Like, if my dad could come back, if he could be here, would he worry about running too slowly? Or would he just be grateful for the opportunity to try? Would he worry about disappointing his doctoral committee? Or would he realize, no, this is my life. This is my one and only shot at being here. I get to make myself happy. I don't need to live for these other people. That sounds a lot more like what a person who truly realizes how finite and precious their one life is. That second part sounds a lot more like what they would say. And I sat there and I contemplated that. And my life changed that day. Well, my mindset changed that day. My life changed over the course of a few years after that. But that realization is what started me down this path of life design, because I realized I am not that different from my dad. You are not that different from my dad. We are all one phone call away from realizing that we aren't, quote, healthy. We're all marching toward the same destination or destinationless journey, right? We all have one shot at this life on this planet at this time. No matter what you believe happens before, after, you know, this experience that we're having, we have one shot here. And I realized that I wanted to make the most of mine and that I wanted to do something that felt authentic to me. And I wanted to try, but I didn't know how. And that's when I started searching. And over the course of years, I found the Stanford University Life Design Lab. And I'm so grateful that I did. And so, you know, I've talked a little bit about in the intro to this episode what life design is, but I hope you can understand why episodes like this are so near and dear to my heart and why I will likely choke up multiple times as I talk about this episode. Because when I started this podcast and as we do this work in Peak Mind, I am intimately aware of the impact that we could make on people. If I take one person today from the position of living life by default, living someone else's expectations, or just living half asleep, if I can take one person with this episode and just nudge them closer to feeling grateful for the experience that they have and the chance that they have and feeling responsible for crafting that experience, I will be absolutely thrilled. Okay, so let's talk about life design itself. Again, I mentioned life design follows the human design process. And the human design process, again, always starts with empathy. And that's what we're going to talk about today. That's really where we're going to do the deep dive today. We're going to talk about one technique for starting to craft a clear picture of what the Stanford Life Design Lab would call your odyssey. After that situation, right? Like we've gone through, let's say we've created our odyssey, we know kind of the clear plan. There are a few steps after that, and I want to just go over those really quickly so that you have an idea of the whole game, like the whole process, before we dive into this one initial very important part of it. Okay, so if you actually want to go to Google right now, you can type in human-centered design process and just click on images. You'll get some really great images. And what you'll see is that all of them kind of follow the same five-ish steps. So the first one is empathize. We learn about the user. Now, I mentioned the Instant Pot, right? Like, who's the user of the Instant Pot? These busy women who run their household, who want to feed their families healthy things without having to, you know, do so many dishes and go through such a fuss, right? That's our key set of users. Here's what's interesting about Life Design Lab, or about Life Design. We're not trying to design for a bunch of users, right? That's complicated. Even though, yes, we've boiled it down to a prototype of a woman, they vary a lot, you know? Like, so it's difficult to try to think about the nuance within that group of users. For you, for your life, there's only one user. I alluded to it as I was telling that story about my dad. You know, my committee members, my doctoral committee, who I was afraid of disappointing when I told them that I didn't want to be a research one academic, they have their own lives. They're not users in my life. They're characters. They're secondary characters. Even my husband and my kids, who are the most important people in my life, they're not the user of my life. They each have their own lives. They each are able to craft their own experience. And not only that, this gets a bit morbid for a second, so stay with me. At the end of my life, it will be me and only me taking that last breath. So if you need convincing that you are the user of your life, think about that. Who will actually be going through that very human process of dying at the end of your life? It's just going to be you. You're the only user, and you are who we are designing for. So in the empathize stage, when we're figuring out what our odyssey looks like, we're getting to know you and who you are as a human being. Now, the second step kind of loops into this one in this exercise that I've been talking about that you can get free with this episode, but that's define. So once we know you, let's define. Let's get a better, clear picture of what are we trying to do? What goal are we after? How do you want your life to feel? What do you want it to look like? What experiences do you want to have? How do you want to spend your time? Who do you want to spend it with? We get really sharp and clear about writing that odyssey and thinking about what that end picture might look like. So that's step two. We've done empathize, we've done define. Then we ideate. This is where the brainstorming comes in. This is where we go for volume. We try to figure out all the possible things that we could do to inch you closer to that definition that you've created, that odyssey that you've created. No ideas are bad ones. We throw them on the table. We allow the ideas we've thrown down to spark additional ideas. We go crazy. We get as many options as we can. And then we start to prototype. Prototyping or experimenting is where we take the ideas that float to the top, the ones that look like they're the best ones that we have. We winnow it down and we say, how can I test this? I don't want to go all in. There's no reason to go too crazy here, but how can I test this to see if this idea even holds water at all? This could involve talking to people. This could involve taking a class in something that you might be interested in. This could involve doing just a trial run of something that you're interested in. But we're going to prototype, and then we're going to test or evaluate. How did that feel? Did it stack up to how I thought it would? Which parts of it did and which parts of it didn't? And then that evaluation stage feeds right back into ideating, experimenting, and evaluating again. So you enter this feedback loop where the idea is that no loop through the system between ideating, prototyping, and evaluating is going to be the be-all, end-all, but you're going to continuously refine and refine and refine and inch your way there. So you should feel some freedom, right? You don't have to have all the answers. You don't have to do it perfectly. This is by nature and by design a messy process. And it gets cleaner as you go. It's an exploratory process. It's a process that helps you solve something called a wicked problem. A tame problem is what engineering helps us solve. Engineering, in contrast to design, which is what we're talking about now, engineering helps solve problems that have known outcomes. I want to create a car that has emissions below a certain threshold. We'll know it when we see it. We can measure it. It's concrete. We just have to engineer our way there and we know when we're done. Wicked problems, there's no known outcome. We don't know what the right answer is. We're trying to feel our way through the dark and figure it out. And that's where design comes in. And that's where this messy process comes in. And that's where permission to fail and to take a bunch of loops through that system, like a bunch, that's where that comes in. So that's the whole process, right? Empathize, define, ideate, prototype or experiment, and then test or evaluate. Again, if you go to Google, Google human-centered design process, click on images, you'll see a whole bunch of them if you're a visual type person. Now, I want to dive into this idea of the odyssey part of life design, or the empathize and define stages. It can be difficult to know what direction to go if we don't have somewhat of an end point in mind. Now, I've already said doing this exercise that I'm offering you free, if you go to peakmindpsychology.com/desire, this is something I do on the regular. You know, I feel like I get kind of blown off course once in a while. I do this exercise and sort of repoint myself in the right direction. I've gone through one of those iterations of the testing and evaluation, and I'm like, huh, how do I feel? I go back and I do this exercise, and it helps me do some of that evaluation and determine, was that a yes or a no? How do I feel about that? So this process that I want to talk about, it's really a great way of using visualization as a practice to get an idea of what it is that you really want. Now, in previous episodes, I'll link to them in the show notes below, but in previous episodes, I've talked about different types of meditation. There's the what I call eat your vegetables meditation that is literally just mind training. You're training your mind to stay in the present moment. That isn't actually what we're talking about in this episode. In this episode, visualization is a way of getting a good picture and a good feel of what that end result that you're after might be. So in this visualization, I'll, you know, guide you through an experience where you'll ultimately end up in a location. You'll have the opportunity to ask some questions and feel into the answers of them. But here's something that I want to encourage you to do. I encourage you to spend some time after the visualization, and this is what the workbook is for. Spend some time after the visualization really deepening into, okay, there was this vivid picture of what I'm after, of the life I'm after. What is it about that life that I'm after? And now I'm going to give you a concrete example from my last session. This is what happened to me a couple of weeks ago. I went through the same visualization that I'll give you for free in that download. And at the end of it, you know, I always have this clear picture of what basically the house that I visualize is, and the lifestyle, and what I'm doing, and what I'm eating, and what I'm wearing. And I can see all of that, right? But in a lot of cases, there are aspects of that end result that are not possible right now. They just aren't. I mean, flat out, I have two very young kids, and some of the things that are in that visualization are just not possible on a regular basis in my life right now. But what I found is that I started probing into why I wanted those things. What is it about it? It isn't, in my case, the house. It wasn't the activities necessarily. It wasn't the food or the clothes or the anything. It was the feeling. It was the feeling of ease and spaciousness. And that was interesting because so many times we can get caught up on the tangibles that we're after, but that's an intangible, right? It's an intangible, but it's also something that I can start to flirt with and cultivate in my life right now. No, I cannot have the hobbies and activities that this, you know, end result person has. Not right now. It's just not realistic. But the feeling around them, the feeling of ease and spaciousness, I absolutely can cultivate that. I started putting more ease into the way I move. There's no reason why if my kid asks for something, for example, that I need to get up and rush and go get it. I can walk at a comfortable human pace. And it's amazing how the movement of our body signals to our mind that we are at peace and at ease. So this is something, again, this has only happened a couple of weeks ago for me. So it's something that I'm still playing with. I am literally in one of those feedback loops of ideate, prototype and experiment, and test and evaluate. But it wasn't until I used this odyssey or used this visualization and probed further that I had this new experiment to run in my life. And that's what I want for you. I want to give you a gift that allows you to get a clearer picture of what you want your life to look like, what, you know, how you want it to feel, all of those pieces, but then some tools for probing to figure out, okay, yes, that's what you want, but what do you really desire? What is really at the heart of it? And that's what I hope to help with this free download and this free visualization that goes along with this episode. One more time, that URL is peakmindpsychology.com/desire. I'll put it in the show notes below on your device so that you can get it really easily. But again, consider signing up for that and then consider bookmarking the page with the visualization and the workbook on it. Because again, this is something that I come back and I do at least twice a month these days. And I've found that I get a deeper level of self-awareness and clarity every single time I do it. So friends, please, please take a lesson from that version of me that was in graduate school, who realized how precious life is, who realized how important and critical the time that we have here is, and who realized what a big responsibility you have, that I have, that we all have, in crafting our own experience. Please make the decision to live by design and not by default. And take me up on this freebie. You have nothing to lose. Try it. See what comes up. And then shoot me an email and let me know what happens. info@peakmindpsychology. I totally want to hear what happens as a result of this. All right, hang with me for a second. I'll be right back. I want to talk about just a couple of other resources for you if you want to take this even deeper. And then you'll be on your way to discovering what you truly desire. All right, friends, just a few quick resources for you if you want to go even deeper or explore some of the rabbit holes that we did not go down during this episode. First resource is one that I've already talked about. Please go get the freebie that accompanies this episode. Go do this visualization, run through the workbook, and let me know what you discover. I cannot wait to hear from you. That link again, peakmindpsychology.com/desire. You go in, you're going to literally get immediate access to the visualization itself and the workbook download. Email me for real. info@peakmindpsychology.com. I want to hear what comes of it. Second resource that I want to talk about. I mentioned earlier in this episode the difference between mindfulness meditation and visualization. I actually did an entire episode on those differences and why we might use each of them. And one of the things I mentioned is that visualization can be really useful in the life design process, which is what we're doing today. But if you want to know, like, okay, well, when do I use each? When do I use this mindfulness meditation and what does it do for me? What's the goal of it? And then when do I use visualization, like what you'd get in the freebie with this episode? And what's the end goal of that? This episode does a good job of sort of teasing those things apart. So that is linked below in this episode description as well. It's episode 316. So excited for you guys to dive in there. Finally, the last piece is, you know, we have professionals who are in HR and employee engagement and employee effectiveness, those sorts of roles in companies. They're increasingly joining our audience just because of how useful this stuff is for helping employees thrive and be more productive and effective. Something I want to highlight is a blog post we wrote called Increasing Employee Engagement. I mentioned that the Stanford University Life Design Lab, Bill Burnett, Dave Evans, they wrote a book called Designing Your Life. They also wrote a book called Designing Your Work Life. And this post is just a sliver of what is in that book, but it gives you a good idea of one of the reasons why employees might feel disengaged. It's not what you're thinking. It's so interesting. And if you explore your own situation as an employee, I think you'll find that they are spot on. So I've linked to that blog post below, Increasing Employee Engagement. Go check it out if you're curious, or if you are an employee and you want to see if it resonates with you. And there's actually some good tools in that post. You might want to check it out as well. I'm so thrilled that you guys joined me for this episode. It is one that I am incredibly passionate about. And I want you to think about that as I end this episode the way that I end all of our episodes right now. I want you to think about why I might put this at the end of all my episodes. So here we go. And finally, let's remember that time is the most non-renewable resource on the planet. And I'm grateful to each and every one of you who chose to spend some of your precious time with me today. I'm Dr. April Seifert, and I'll see you next week.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.